All right, welcome to this week's episode of Double Nine Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
So just after the close here, January 19th, another short week. I guess this is the last short week we get for like a month or so, Sam.
Yeah, take it while we get it.
Take what we can get. Why don't we hop into the where are we for this week? It seemed like it was kind of a slow week, though we did get some pretty good market moves.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be talking about it in a little bit, but we did see some moves on one particular economic data point there. But without further ado, with regards to the market performance over the shortened week, which looks like a little bit of a mixed bag here, with the S&P 500 up just over 1% on the week-to-date basis. And looking at it, leading the way, we're going to see some familiar names here. Technology up over 4% on the week-to-date. Communication services, the second best performer in this week. That's up 1.29%. And then flipping it on the other end of the spectrum there, we also have some familiar names here, Jeff. We got utilities down 3.7% and energy down 3% as well. So moving over across the board, looking at the fixed income market, so we did have some moves in the treasury market here, pretty much across the tenors that we look at across on the yield curve here. They're all up. Leading the charge was the 2-year treasury note, up 25 basis points in yield to close this week at a yield of 4.39. 10-year note was up 19 basis points to close at 4.13. And let's see here, the bond was up 17 basis points to close the week here at 4.34. So again, another repeat week of being above 4% yield for those parts of the curve that we look at here. So what that meant for a broad basket of U.S. bonds, the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate was down a point on the week-to-date basis. It maintains this negative print for the year-to-date as well. It's down 1.25% about for the start of 2024. And looking across the sectors that we cover here, pretty much every window of time that we have here, the week-to-date, the month-to-date, which also matches the year-to-date here, they're all negative across all of these sectors here. But for this week, bank loans was the relative best performer, down about 10 basis points on the week-to-date. High yield also down negative 70 basis points. That's the second best performer for this cohort that we look at. So down in credit, outperforming on a relative basis. When we take a look at the components within the Bloomberg aggregate, we have the agency mortgage-backed security side down 1.4%, IG corporate credit down 1.3%, and U.S. Treasuries down 1%. And then moving outside the U.S., we have emerging market sovereigns down over a point as well on the week-to-date. So pretty bloody out there in the fixed income market this week, wherever you go, up and down the credit sector, or even looking across to sovereign debt as well. Similar type of feel when we look at the commodity market on the Bloomberg Commodity Index, a broad-based basket of 24 commodities. That's down over 1% on the week-to-date and just down about 1.5% on the year-to-date basis. When we take a look at a little bit of a surprise here to see WTI with a positive print on it, not only on the week-to-date, that's up 1.6%, but also on the year-to-date basis, that's up 3%. On the front month futures price of WTI crude oil futures. Looking at gold here, it's just hanging on to this 2,000 mark per troy ounce at, looks like it's $2,030 a troy ounce here, but that's still down 8% over the prior week and down 2% on the year. So again, a mixed bag across these financial assets that we take a look at here each week on the minutes, Jeff. But with that note, do you want to kick us off on what happened in macro land?
Yeah, we did get, it was an interesting week in macroland, even though it was a short week. As you said, there was I guess there was multiple market moving events, but one we want to highlight here, and that was the kind of the first one of the week, came out on Wednesday the 17th. That was the retail sales number. And the retail sales number, the advanced number month over month came in at 0.6%. It was estimated to be 0.4, so it'll beat their stronger kind of retail sales. The prior month was a 0.3. And then the so-called control group came in at 0.8%. It was estimated to be 0.2. So again, a big beat there from a 0.2 to a 0.8. And we'll take a deeper dive into that in the topic of the week. We also got the import price indices that came out. This is for December. The month over month number for that was 0.0. It was estimated to fall by 0.5%. So a stronger beat there, a little bit higher. Maybe a little bit more inflationary pressures there from that import prices. The year over year number was expected to be negative 2%, came in at negative 1.6. And then on Thursday, we did get the jobless claims numbers as is typical. Actually came in under expectations. The initial jobless claims came in at 187,000. Was expected to be 205. It was a 203 last month. So last week, expectations was to be flat, actually came in below. Continuing claims came in at 1.806 million. Was expected to be similar story, expected to be 1.84 million, and it was 1.83 the previous week. So again, also beating expectations there. It does say, the four-week moving average is continuing to come down on the continuing claims number. So it has been pretty flat here from that. And so we'll continue to look at that and see whether that actually comes to fruition, whether the labor market does continue to soften. And then almost surprisingly today, we don't usually talk about it, but just because I was surprised to see it, the University of Michigan sentiment numbers came out. These are the January preliminary ones, actually came in above expectations. So was expected to be 70.1, came in at 78.7. So a pretty big beat there. As you talk about all the, it doesn't feel like things are getting, maybe it feels like things haven't changed that much. So for that sentiment to pop there is pretty surprising there. But there's something we do talk about, something we do look at is the inflation expectations. The one-year inflation expectations from that same survey came in at 2.9%. It was 3.1% to be expected, which was similar to last month. So it came in down as we can kind of, it corroborates the inflation numbers that we've seen recently. And the kind of long-term 5 to 10 year inflation expectations, those actually came in at 2.8, was expected to be 3.0. So, inflation kind of a lot similar with what the Fed has been thinking, has been continuing to come down, not really be embedded as the Fed would be worried about. We move over to Fed speak for the week. If we look at the interest rate probabilities, we have a 2.5% chance of a Fed cut here next week in January, or it's January 31st, so it's a week and a half away from here. And also, interestingly, we're below 50% now of a cut on March 20th, which is the subsequent Fed meeting. We were up at almost like 90-100% chance of a Fed rate cut in March earlier in the year, or I guess late last year, early this year. We're now at a 50-50 here, so we'll have to see what the data comes up with. We're still pricing in slightly over 5 cuts in the year, though. So, you dialed that back, from the 6 we had earlier, but we're looking at like 5.3, 5.4, and 6 in January. The 6th cut would be in January of 2025. So, kind of shifting things a little bit, but nothing too major there. And in terms of Fed speak, Waller, which is one of the main guys on the Fed there, talking about rate cuts. He wasn't really talking about the timing of any rate cuts, but he did say, it's reasonable to assume that we get rate cuts in 2024. I doesn't want to talk about the timing of the first cut, but really talked about, that they're going to be data dependent. So no big change there. One of the things he did note is that, if you look at historical records, the Fed cuts and it cuts very quickly with a very large amount. And usually that is because the Fed has moved into a recession, or the Fed has brought the economy into a recession, right? So they've killed the economy. They need to cut rates. He said this time it's, quote, unusual because the economy is experiencing kind of moderate rates of growth, disinflation. And so maybe it gives the policymakers, gives the Fed a little bit more flexibility to reduce rates gradually, he said early and gradually. So kind of still stay in that tightening mode. But not really be in a place where they need to keep rates, that higher for longer. So that'll be interesting to see. Again, he kind of talked about data dependency there again. And then some, the kind of the topic that keeps popping up now that one of these days the Fed's going to have to talk about, or Powell's going to have to talk about in the press conference, is the balance sheet and whether they're going to start tapering the balance, or tapering the reduction in the balance sheet. And it kind of seemed like Waller was of the case where they're going to let the mortgages, agency mortgages, continue to roll off at the very, very low rate they are today, not change the cap there on the mortgage side of things, but maybe reduce the cap on the treasury side just to slow the balance sheet unwind.
Yeah, so a lot going on. I mean, a lot of people are trying to speculate still on what's going to happen over the course of the next few months with regards to the Fed interest rate policy. So it's always good to get a pulse, you know, from what the central bankers are talking about and the governors there at the Federal Reserve.
And we won't get any Fed speak next week because the blackout starts tomorrow on the 20th for that 31st meeting. So, you know, thankfully there won't be those types of market moving events next week.
All right. So with that, let's jump into the topic of the week. We, you know, like most weeks, we didn't get a suggestion for a topic of the week, so we chose one ourselves. Today, our topic of the week is going to be the retail sales data that we talked about just earlier in the macro section that was released on January 17th. And, you know, the reason why we think it's important, it is something that tends to be or can be market moving, is because it really gives a sense of how American consumers are voting with their wallets, so to speak. You know, a lot of times we can speculate on the strength of the American consumer through sentiment surveys that, you know, we see just, you know, for today we got that University of Michigan sentiment survey, and it seems to be pointing to positive sentiment as well as expectations for the future. But here we're really seeing kind of it being confirmed by the retail sales data that we had for the month of December there. So it gives us a sense of the trend of, you know, perhaps if the American consumer is willing to spend more or spend less, and how that might have an impact on the greater economy as well as earnings for corporates that fit within the scope of the report. But it's important to note because retail sales accounts for roughly, is the estimate, is about one third of GDP, nominal GDP here. So it is something that again, markets take notice of. But to dive into it, the retail sales is a report that's based on data from the U.S. Census's monthly retail trade survey. And these retail sales reports are compiled from data that's received by the Census Bureau from surveys of around 12, I've seen anywhere from 12 to 13,000 stores, retailers, as well as these include both actual store outlets as well as those online outlets that we're seeing more and more of having a bigger impact on retail sales today. But these institutions, these establishments, they're randomly selected based on criteria that can include adjust for minimum size of the business based on dollar amounts of sales that they generate each year, the area that they conduct business in, how many paid employees they have, and just really trying to spread out a better sample set across the U.S. So you avoid some concentration in certain areas. You know, you're really looking across all 50 states there. And with this, you know, the data is effectively that they get from the surveys that's used to extrapolate the trend for consumer spending patterns throughout the entire nation. This data is released at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time, and it has an inconsistent release date, but it's somewhere around the middle of the month. Sometimes it's the second week, sometimes it's the third week, sometimes it's on Tuesday. We just had this one on the Wednesday. So it's fairly inconsistent. I couldn't figure out anything in terms of the exact release date, but they make it known pretty well in advance. So if you are interested in, you know, catching the data and, you know, anticipating it, then it's pretty easy to find. But in these monthly data sets that we get, they do include, as you mentioned earlier, Jeff, it does include an advance report, but then in that report, it also acknowledges any revisions that were made to the prior periods. But as we've seen in many of the data sets that we look at here, the market just seems secure about that advance estimate that they provide, and then seem to fade the revisions that come as more and more data comes through to give a more complete picture on the actual amount. So what we just received this past Wednesday was the advance report. And with regards to the reports that the market generally puts the most importance on, there's, I guess, what you can call the headline number, and that's just the U.S. Retail and Food Services Retailer Report there. And within that, that can include both restaurants as well as retail services that are related to the direct sale of actual goods to the end user. Maybe start thinking about services
that wouldn't be included, those would be things that don't really provide a good to the final consumer. Things such as financial services or legal services are not included. But as I mentioned before, this can include both brick and mortar as well as online stores in terms of the retail aspect. And then it also covers both the durables and non-durable parts of goods. Within this headline, I'm going to use the word headline. I don't think that's common, the commonly cited, but this top line retail and food services report, the largest components within there are automotive components, the food and beverage related, that includes both the actual restaurants as well as the food and beverage services, which would be where you would get, you know, within the restaurants as well, but it also includes the stores themselves that sell food and liquor. But also gas and what they refer to as general merchandise, as well as non-store retailers, which I take to include to be the online retailers there. What is also important, and it doesn't seem to get as much traction, I think, from, you know, market pundits here, but it is certainly important when you start thinking about how the GDP and economic activity is calculated here in the U.S. is what's known as the control group. I've also seen it referred to as the core retail sales, but what that does is it takes the headline retail sales and food services report, and from there it excludes the receipts that are received by retailers from gas-related gas stations, auto dealers, and auto parts, as well as building retailers and building materials retailers, as well as food services. And really, what the part of the reason why they exclude this, and this I thought this was interesting. I never really heard about this until we started digging into this morning, Jeff. But it says the reason why these are extracted is not necessarily because they're not important or because they're considered volatile. You know, when we think about CPI, we've got the headline core where that food and energy that's extracted because it is volatile despite having such a big allocation to most people's wallets on a monthly basis. But here, the BEA says that not all retail sales types are going to be, and I'm sorry here. So BEA is the book of record for calculating the GDP for the U.S. And as a reminder, the retail sales is the U.S. Census Bureau. So in taking this retail sales report, the BEA excludes these components for their estimate when they're talking about GDP, and within GDP, where this most aligns closely to is to the personal consumption expenditures component. And from there, I'm talking mainly the consumer spending component of GDP, not necessarily just the inflation component, which would take shape within the deflator, but the actual spending component within there, consumer spending. But they extract it because they find that there is more comprehensive sources of data than what's released by the U.S. Census Bureau versus via its retail sales report. Because again, remember, it's a sampling of around 12 to 13,000 retailers. So in this case, when the BEA, when they look at gas data that's used within GDP, there they go to data that's compiled by the Department of Energy instead of just these monthly survey of various gas stations, you know, across the country for their report. And it's similar there for autos. They defer to various automotive industry groups for their indication on sales for that industry rather than going and relying on the dealership survey. And then finally, when you think about building materials falls into residential investment within the components of GDP instead of the personal consumption basket there. So I thought that was a little bit interesting, but you know, again, Jeff, you and I wanted to highlight this today because it does, it can be a market-moving event, and it is something that really today I think it's something that the Fed is also considering, given their decision making around how much they want to ease monetary policy from its current tight status, and then also into thinking about how they're going to continue thinking about the quantitative tightening component as they, you know, as related to their balance sheet.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, Sam. I didn't really realize that on the control group. Makes sense, though. You know, as we always like to talk about, survey data is always questionable at best. So if you have better data sources, it's good that they're using that. And I thought it was interesting. I wanted to look and see, like, what is actually what is the report that the Census Department sends out? Like, is it like super complicated, and maybe they're getting less data returned back to them because it's super complicated? But surprisingly, it's a very short two-page two-page report, and probably could be one, you know, if they got rid of all the bunch of blank space and stuff. But it's basically like, what's your firm? How many retail establishments do you have? Are you reporting for a calendar month, 4 weeks, 5 weeks? When does that end? What's the amount of dollars in reported sales you have in terms of dollars? And then is that a book figure or an estimate? And that's it. And then contact information. So seems pretty straightforward. And maybe they're getting, like, I was unable to find their kind of return rate on whether people are actually returning the surveys or not. We know that those numbers are down pretty substantially over the past few years. But this one seems like it's pretty simple, pretty straightforward. So maybe they're getting a little bit better feedback from that.
Yeah, and I did notice something in there that they, in terms of the surveys and in terms of the vehicle that they use to provide said surveys, they can do it by phone. They can the respondents can reply by email or facsimile. So it always makes you laugh when I see stuff still being accepted by the fax. But here, you know, we are talking about the U.S. government after all. But one other thing I would note in terms of somewhat of a kudos that you're throwing them out there, Jeff, is the report itself in terms of the actual the sales for retail and food services component is pretty straightforward and simple to read through as well. It's not like some of the other government reports that are thrown out, but in, you know, the vein of the government, it is difficult. It can be difficult to find on their website, but it is available on census.gov. And if you start going down the wormhole of, or the rabbit hole of looking at the retail sales, you can get there. And I think the easiest way perhaps is to try to start with their press release, and you may find it through there.
Yeah, their census website is pretty bare bones. So,
yeah.
All right, with that, let's move on to the things to keep an eye on for next week. On Monday, we do get the leading index out there, the LEI. It's estimated to be a negative 0.3. It was a negative 0.5 last month, so a little bit of an increase there. We have a 0.7% rolling off. So that brings our estimate year over year to like a negative 7.2. I was watching the Roundtable Prime, the first part of Roundtable Prime this morning, and there was a little bit of talk about the LEI and how it's been wrong for so long. I guess the idea is that it's maybe wrong for so long, but it could be right this time. So I guess we never know when that recession is going to come up. On Wednesday, we do get the S&P Global January preliminary numbers for the PMI, both manufacturing and services. Manufacturing is expected to remain weak at 47.7 from a 47.9 last month. And services, I guess, a little bit weaker at 51.0 versus a 51.4 the prior month. So still expansionary on services, still contractionary on manufacturing, kind of both getting a little bit closer to 50. On Thursday, we do get the first estimate of the fourth quarter GDP number. That's expected to be a 2.0 number. So if you remember the third quarter was estimated to be 4.9, or what did come out to be 4.9. So the estimate here is 2. So pretty solid number off of back of a pretty high number for the third quarter. Looks like today's number hadn't come out yet. But the Atlanta Fed GDP Now number was estimated 2.4. So anywhere from that 2.0 to 2.4 number will still be strong for the fourth quarter of 2023. As typical, we get the initial and continuing jobless claims on Thursday. Those numbers are expected to remain flat. Maybe, I guess, initial claims are expected to pop a little bit to 200,000 versus the 187,000 that it was this week. So we'll see where that comes out. And then we got the big numbers. We got personal income and spending on Friday. The personal income expected to be 0.3, down from 0.4 last month. Spending up from 0.2 to 0.4%. Mark Kimbrough here has on personal income over the past 20 years has been a 0.4 average. So we're right on, you know, right below, right around that average there. So it hasn't really changed that much, just kind of moving around a little bit, or, you know, a little bit of noise there. Same with personal spending. As you would expect, income and spending average about the same. So right now we're looking at, if we get spending at 0.4, income at 0.3, maybe people are spending a little bit of their savings. We also get the PCE numbers. On Friday, the PCE deflator month over month. So the headline is expected to be 0.2, was a negative 0.1 last month. So a little bit increase there in inflation there. That would bring the year over year number to 2.6, which would be flat from December or from November. And then the core PCE, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge here, we do get the 0.2 month over month expectation from a 0.1 last month. that would actually bring the year-over-year number down to 3.0. So getting pretty close to maybe where the Fed's starting to feel a little bit more comfortable. 3.0, maybe we get a two handle next month. And, the Fed had talked about they're going to want to, ideally they would cut rates before they get to that 2.0 on the nose. So 2.9 is starting to feel like maybe there's, I guess that's why they're starting to chatter about cutting rates a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see the 6-month annualized core PCE number would come out at a 1.9. So we're below two, we would be below two there. Kimbro wrote in here, mission accomplished, ? So we'll see whether the Fed, takes their foot off the gas and, or I guess off the brake, and whether they let us coast for a little bit.
And I mean, I guess with that, it's the most difficult time for them now, right? Because they came off the buzzsaw in 2022 and parts of 2023, and they got us down into this 3 handle, soon to maybe be the 2 handle. But now there's the risk of taking the foot off the gas too early and getting a rebound higher in inflation, or just taking it off too late and getting some, they call it the PCE deflator, but maybe it'll, jump into deflation territory. So, trying to keep it within that sweet spot, we'll see if they're able to do it, but they've got to get rid of that buzzsaw and bring out the scalpel, I guess.
Yep. And that's always, much harder, as you said.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps it up. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in this week.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening to us today on the Minutes. Either on podcast or via the X Live here. So don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already so you don't miss an episode. If you have any suggestions for the topic of the week or just any comments in general, you can go ahead and hit us up on the X at D-Line Minutes, or you can send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com. Just don't send us a facsimile because we will not be checking that. Although I think we have one still.
I think we probably do.
Yeah.
Don't forget our website is doubleline.com. YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. We have Jeffrey Gundlach's Just Markets webcast replay from last week. As I said, I watched the first part, the macroeconomics part of the Roundtable Prime, that was recorded last week also. We also will have the parts 2 and 3 coming out over the weekend. So tune in for that. And we'll get another Sherman Show out next week on Thursday. So make sure to follow Jeff and Sam there at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of DoubleLine Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.